you know, Africa has moved from HIPC 20 years ago. So we believe that we have grown up. We believe that we've done good macroeconomic policies. And so we are not essentially basket cases of the world where, you know, we rack up debt and then something happens and then we ask for a cancellation. There's many countries, I think, that can sort of walk their way out through this crisis if we did it rightly. And so I think the concept of cancellation is a romantic concept around HIPC. The first thing is if you do debt cancellation, the second thing is if you do debt cancellation, it takes about 10 years to close on it. So in an emergency crisis, we don't have time to renegotiate, and you will know this, that, you know, countries got into the HIPC and then, you know, you negotiate stage one, stage two, and stage three. And, you know, countries like Chad, you know, took 12 years to a completion date. I don't think we have 12 years, and I don't think anybody would want to wait 12 years to figure out how to respond to COVID. And so we don't want debt cancellation because then they would be rated really badly and would not have access to additional credit when they go back to the markets. And so it will actually be a negative if we did that for countries who have been, and globally, Africa has been taking on good macro-prudent policies. So we don't want to sort of create a moral hazard situation where we start asking for debt cancellation just because there is an opportunity to ask for it when there is no fundamental basis for it.
Thank you.
And now, during the standstill period, what we are also going to look at, and this is, and we call for this in our letter, is of course you have the Sahel countries, which are a different a group of countries in a much more stretched situation, the Central African Republics of the world. And that's why we want the debt standstill. So we can then unpack the countries and say, okay, you have a debt standstill. Now let's look at which countries are really suffering, which countries can just not afford to do anything. And maybe we come back and say, okay, for this five or seven, you know, an annulment of interest or even interest in principle is the right way to go, because they won't, you know, if you have your revenue to GDP at 10% and it gets wiped out, there's nothing you can do, right? And so for those ones, you know, we will have to look for something else. But that's why we need the standstill, is just to say, okay, let everybody freeze and let's understand who is where and how do we support each person in a very specific manner. Some people will have access to the markets tomorrow morning. South Africa, maybe, but maybe not. They have a 20% depreciation right now, so they may be more expensive. But so even they need a debt standstill just to get a sense of where they're going to come out tomorrow morning.
Thank you. So I think there's one last question we have here, and if it's okay with everybody, because I think we plan for between 1 hour and 1 hour and a half. We'll leave it to there. And then I have one last question here, which comes from Yemisi, which is, there are also opportunities for Africa here, particularly when we consider the impact of export bans. Example is on rice. What financial interventions are being implemented to build on these opportunities?
William, do you want to come in here and talk about the agribusiness and the African Bank initiative?
Thank you so much, Stephen. With regards to opportunities for Africa, financial institutions are looking at mechanisms as to how to help African located businesses to increase their production and to increase their output. We've got an initiative right now with Afrexim Bank, which is looking at the pharmaceutical sector and also the agricultural sector, to see how best those companies can have access to extra funding to prepare them for increased output in terms of pharmaceutical products and in terms of agriculture products. So we are looking at suppliers of fertilizer, input, seeds, and everything to assist those companies and producers within the African continent to have access to funding and access to material inputs so that they can increase their output. And in anticipation that that output is going to be distributed throughout Africa to meet the demand and the needs of the African countries. With regards to pharmaceutical products, we've already looked at a number of producers of PPEs, the manufacturers of drugs and other essential products, and want to see how they can tap into the facility from Afrexim Bank to help them increase their output, to help them access to raw materials. But at the end of the day, the opportunity is to support African businesses so that they can take into account of the opportunity that has arisen out of the closing of borders and not having access to products. Stephen, you can add up in terms of AFCTA and how that will assist in the companies that will produce more output and how the goods will flow from one country to another. Thank you.
Thanks, William. I think you have answered it. I think what EMEC is saying is that really we need to build on these opportunities, just like we were saying in the previous questions, that this is a moment that makes it easy to make arguments for some of the things that we've been saying for a long time. And I think with the numbers that we have shown of the amount of imports that we get, both in terms of food, the risk that we face because of the export bans for the pharmaceutical, the AfCFTA, which is bringing down all the barriers in terms of tariffs and non-tariffs, enhancing trade facilitation, dealing with issues of regulation, had we implemented the AfCFTA 10 years ago, would we be suffering or be vulnerable the way we are today? And I think based on all the simulations and all the work that has been done, we would be in a better place than we are now. And I think that is why in Europe, they're able to move things, even as they do export bans, the things are still moving within Europe. And I think that is where we would want to be. So if we had the AfCFTA 10 years ago, we would be in a similar situation whereby we are not only producing, but we would not be worried too much because the rest of the world is closing their exports from the rest of us. So we need to do the AfCFTA, and I think that's a message that should come out strongly as a coping mechanism, in addition to the climate change issues, moving forward.
Thank you very much. So actually, you know, I still have some more questions to stay. And what we should do probably, and if everybody's agrees, those who have conflicting agendas should be excused. And then if the ECA team is still available, I have about 6 to 7 questions. So we try to take 15 to 20 minutes, but it depends on your availability. Yes?
We are here.
Okay. Yeah. So if you are available, then I'll go ahead and read these questions they have received. And then those who need to be excused should just excuse themselves, right? And those who can continue would continue.
Yeah.
So question number one. Is this 100 billion fiscal stimulus is for how long? A timeline is important to establish. That's question number one. And this is coming from Umaru Jao. Question number two. Between slides 19 and 22, the report is naming economic areas that will be affected. Cashew export seems to be missing. So that was an observation. Question number three. As for scenarios to mitigate COVID-19, there are four. A through D. People in general like recommendations. Would you recommend one best scenario for the continent? Question number four. As Asia, Europe, and North America suffer from post-COVID era, is Africa worried that its migrants will be unable to fulfill their remittances obligations due to loss of jobs in those countries? Are there risk of repatriation? Question number five, fighting fake news and misinformation will be essential. How much emphasis is put on this? Example, conspiracy theories are already talking about unwanted vaccines extra. This may create an attitude detrimental to fighting the disease. And question number six, if vaccines are found to mitigate or cure COVID-19, the interest and the approaches will change. Is Africa anticipating such a thing? So I think I have one last question. I'm reading it actually as it came. So I'm just seeing, and this is from Debo Adesina in Nigeria. Very comprehensive presentation. I only would like to emphasize that wars are won at both the levels of substance and symbols. While the ECA and African countries are taking these enunciated steps towards combating COVID-19 and its aftermath, the symbolic gestures of retailing hope to the people through messaging are just as important. So that was an observation and a suggestion and comment. And then somebody's asking if we could have the slides circulated. So over to you, and then we'll bring this to a close. ECA?
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Amadou. I don't know whether Toko, are you here?
Yes, I'm here, Stephen.
I think we cannot, even before we continue, I think we should give you, first of all, the floor to say something and see if there is anything you want to answer on these questions.
Yes, let me talk to the question on migrants and the challenges for migrants and remittances. In one of the slides that Stephen presented, you could already see that I think it was on this presentation, you can already see that there will be a huge cut in the remittances that migrants send home. If you look at countries like South Africa, where migrants right now as we speak are not in any job, if you look at countries like, of course, the migrants that are in the developed countries that are not able to send anything back home. So definitely, the remittances from the migrants will be affected. Is there a challenge around the migrants and victimization? We can anticipate that. Let's look at China. And I'm sure you've been following the tweets and the challenges that the migrants in China are facing. And one can anticipate that coming up. Already in Europe, there were challenges for migrants that they were not wanted. And with jobs getting scarcer, I anticipate that definitely. We anticipate, we don't have figures yet, and probably that's something that we should look at and try and simulate and see what it means for the migrants in Europe, in the US, and of course in the African countries, especially countries like South Africa, where COVID-19 is having a huge impact on the economies. Yes, Stephen, I think that was the specific question related to me.
Oh, thank you, Toko. So I think on the past question, which I can answer or part on the fiscal stimulus, the 100 billion is actually for 2020. If you stretch the economic impacts beyond 2020, we argue that you need more, you may need more, and that's why the support for the IMF facilities needs to be where it comes in. It goes beyond. It allows you to get more than 100 billion to be able to go beyond 2020. So the 100 billion is for here and now. On the question of cashews are missing, I think that is something we will look at if I got the crop carefully, so that we can also see what would happen to that. On the four scenarios, I think I'll go back to what the ES said, is that we would want to be lower than scenario four. So in fact, what we have tried to do is actually to cost each of those scenarios on the basis of the price of what you need if you had that kind of number of people in the hospitals. And it almost becomes impossible for Africa to be able to deal with COVID-19 if you start going beyond the scenario D. So we don't want to say that is our recommendation, but we would not want to go beyond that. If anything, we would want to be lower. And I think what we are going to do is to try to see whether there are new simulations for this Imperial College model since the last 3 weeks to see what it is. Yeah, but if you do back of the envelope, if I may say, on what is happening in the other countries, it does actually show that the 300,000 is possible if you do not prepare enough. You can easily lose 300,000 lives very quickly. Because we have a population of 1.3 billion and we are vulnerable, as our report is arguing. We do not have the ability to raise as much money as we need today. And we are so constrained. So it can actually happen, but we don't want it to happen. Fighting fake news, who wants to take that? Mamasi, I see you online. Al Mustafa. Or Aida.
Yeah. Okay, I would say.
I'm here, Steve.
Okay, so do you want me to talk about fighting fake news?
So on fighting fake news, if I may, there is actually a big effort by the UN system to gather an entire sort of overview of the landscape of fake news. And this report will be released in the next few days. We are waiting for it. This was discussed today at the Global UN Communications Group meeting, which we held about 3 hours ago. And I'll be able to share that with everyone once it comes out. But there's an in-depth research underway and an assessment of the entire landscape and what's going on in that area. And so that work is almost completed. We'll be able to share that.
Mercy, Steve, this is
yes,
Aida.
Yes, please.
Yes, Mercy, I just wanted Mercy to maybe give a bit of background on the UN Communications Crisis Group and the messaging that that will be coming out and how that will assist the media.
Thank you, Aida. Mercy. Mercy, we can't hear you. About the UN Coordinated Crisis Group, a bit more on that.
Okay. I didn't catch the last line, the last sentence that Aida said. I didn't quite catch that. But it has to do with the UN communications efforts across the UN system. We have a crisis communications group that is evaluating all kinds of issues, from, of course, the inputs of the different agencies, UN agencies across the board, as well as the entire gamut of crisis of fake news, as well as key messages coming out of the various aspects of the work of the agencies, the principal and the secretary general. And so there's an effort to ensure that we are in sync, that we are talking as one, that we are collaborating. And some of this is useful for the media, some of it is far too internal for anybody use outside of the system. But in terms of messaging and what to see, I'm happy to share some of that with this group so that they are able to remain informed of what it is that we are doing. I'm happy to do that.
Thank you, Mercy.
Okay, I think there was a last question, the one on
vaccines.
Vaccine, I did not get what the question was about.
So the question is, if vaccines are found to mitigate or cure COVID-19, the interest and the approaches will change. Is
yes.
Africa anticipating such a thing?
Ah, good question. Who would want to take that among my colleagues?
Well, I mean, let me try that. The first thing on vaccines is whether Africa will have access to them, right? And I think, Stephen, you have that in your paper, is, you know, when the vaccines become available, the research companies that are doing the vaccines will have to price it at market price or something prohibitive just to be able to sort of get their money back. And so then the question is, do we make it a global public good and make sure that everybody has access to it? Vaccines, I think the earliest is about 12 to 18 months. We are seeing from the U.S. and all the research that's happening. People say it may come earlier, but I think that if you listen to the U.S. Surgeon General, it's in about a year's time. So at least a wave of Africa would have happened. And then the question becomes, given the deadly nature of this virus, do we then share the intellectual property right so that as many people that can produce vaccines can do it? Of course, as you know now, there is the whole conversation around the plasma and the fact that, you know, we can use the plasma to maybe reduce the sort of infection rates. So all these things are things that are being considered. But again, the question becomes, how much of Africa can afford and has access to these things when they become available? And that's why we need a global approach to the problem, so that if we treat it as a public good, then maybe agencies like Gavi and the Global Fund can have access to some quarter of the vaccine as soon as it's available, so that Africa can also have a share of it.
Thank you. Yes. And I think the last question was, could we have the slides? And I think we said yes. As long as we say it's going to be cited, you got access, you got sight of an advanced funding.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you
very much. So Marcy will share the slides with you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Stephen. Thank you, Executive Secretary. Thank you very much to all my colleagues and friends who joined on this call. I think, you know, in our first discussion with the Executive Secretary, there was this discussion about, you know, in this time of gloom and doom, it's also good to be giving a story of hope, a story, you know, where people can, you know, somehow see the light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, listening to your report and seeing some of the examples in Kenya, in Ethiopia, but also in Senegal, in Ghana, and in Morocco, you know, necessity being the mother of invention, there's things which have already started, you know, happening on the ground, which are really hopeful with the repurposing of all the industries we've been seeing. So I think, you know, this has been very interesting and useful information. So thank you very much for making the time at the ECA team. Thank you very much, friends and colleagues, for having joined this. And just one last request. If there is any reports or any social networks being coming out of this, please tag also the ECA group, as we have discussed before. So thank you very much. I'll hand it over now to... for her closing comments, and then bring us to a close.
No, thank you. Thank you, Amadou. Thanks to everybody who is on the line, Debo, Leslie, Omar, everybody else. I think that we are delivering on our first promise, which was that when we have something, we will call you to sort of be get some preview of it. But I think this is also useful, given the sort of novelty of the novel coronavirus, to have you spend some time with us to get a sense of sort of the nuances around, you know, what countries and nations are facing, and some of the challenges for which we don't have full answers yet. I think given the question on, you know, is a lockdown the right thing? When do you open? Even the United States is struggling with when you open. Italy had promised to open this weekend. They've extended by 2 weeks. So I think it's really a learning by doing process, but I think that everybody's trying to err on the side of caution and precaution to ensure that we don't spread the virus. That we know that, you know, we have to make sure that we don't spread the virus. So we count on you to sort of, you know, inform the publics about these things. We are available to answer your questions even after this, individually, collectively. But I think as we continue to do some more work on this piece of work, on this sort of global area, you know, we will come back to you, and maybe there is some positives. You know, the climate change is getting better, and so I think we at some point we'll have a long conversation on, you know, what is happening to our global earth as coronavirus comes by. And I think, as Bart said, you know, industrialization may come back, and maybe there will be more intra-African trade. So I think there's a few things, that the use of telecommunications and internet devices, as Stephen said. So there's some good things really happening, and we hope that those are irreversible, and we will also count on you guys to keep sort of getting the good stories and telling them so that people do have hope as they come forward. On that note, I just want to really thank you all again for making the time to come and listen to us and chat with us and have this conversation. I think, like I said the last time, you know, we do the intellectual work, but you sort of talk to the people. And sometimes we think that our work is relevant and the people are asking different questions. And I think we need you to keep us honest in that sense as well. And I think some of the questions that you're asking we'll take back, even if we haven't been able to give you full answers, and maybe see how we can structure those answers and come back to you with them. Because my sense is that we are only relevant if we are actually talking and interacting with you and through you to with the population. So we've taken note of some of the questions that I think we need to deepen. And maybe as we do more analysis, we will come back with answers on that, particularly this question of the lockdown, and see whether we can put out something on sort of economic, social impacts of, you know, what is the optimal approach to that and how you do it in different countries and different geographies. But once again, thank you so much, and stay safe, and we'll be talking very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a good evening. Okay. Bye.
Oh, Omar, are you sending anything?
Bye. Hello. Bye. Everybody, bye. Yes, bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.